Good morning. Welcome to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and we've got a full house today. We're going to talk about trees, taking care of new baby trees, and the stewardship program that the city of Astoria has set up to take care of new baby trees. And we're also going to talk about a garden tour in Astoria this weekend. Let's start talking about that. My guests are... I have a lot of guests. Let's see. We have Bob Goldberg. We're going to talk about trees. Morning, Bob.
Hi there.
Okay. And I've got from the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, I've got Linda Oldenkamp and Melissa Yowell.
Good morning. Good morning.
Okay. So let's talk about the garden tour. This is the 10th annual garden tour. And I'd say the most compelling reason to go on a garden tour is to steal great ideas of what works in the neighborhood. And it's this Saturday from 10 to 3. And every year the gardens are a secret. And at least they're a secret from the public. The people working on the tour know.
Yes.
Right.
If people want to buy tickets ahead of time, can they do that?
No. It will be at the Win the Garden Tour.
Okay. So then they need to go to your house.
690 17th Street in Astoria.
Okay. Let's do that again.
690 17th Street in Astoria, and that is June 10 from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can buy tickets.
It's in July.
July 10th.
Okay. And how many gardens this year?
We have six.
Okay. And... now, four of them are in Astoria and two are in Warrenton.
Exactly.
And that is delightful. And then at the end of the tour, there's also a reception.
A raffle reception at the, and it will actually be at kind of what is the last garden.
All right. Now, you can do them in any order. If you, for instance, if you lived near the ones in Warrenton, of course, then you have to come into Astoria to get your ticket.
Right.
So
ideally it is to get the ticket in Astoria and then follow the map that we have.
Okay, so after you pay, you get a map, and then you can go in whatever order you want. when does the reception start?
It's from 3 to 4:30.
Okay, so it's definitely at the end.
Right.
It's not during. But you can go to the Warrenton ones at any time during that.
Sure.
But then if you want to go to the reception, you can go back.
Right.
So why would people want to go to the reception?
Well, there's lots of good food, and
so that's part of your admission,
right?
Okay,
yes. And also, we will be announcing the raffle winners there,
mm-hmm.
and the winners don't need to be present to get their prizes, but we will be announcing them there and giving away the prizes at that time.
Okay, well, I have to say that I've been to almost all the garden tours. Pretty much, maybe all of them. And the food is always spectacular. It's not just boring, you know,
right. Cheese
and cold cuts. It's really imaginative, good food. And the raffle prizes are spectacular. And when they're announced, there's great oohing and aahing and significant jealousy that I didn't get that cool, whatever it is. We should probably talk. You've got some very cool prizes.
Yes, we do. We have in total 25 raffle prizes.
Uh-huh.
Some of them are a Harvest Moon Design, Becky Graham. I believe she's been on your program once. She is going to do some sort of treatment in one of her beautiful pots.
Oh, you mean that's
going to be
pot
on the raffle with something.
Oh, goody. I can't
As
wait.
I understand it. Uh-huh. And Brim's Farm and Garden will have a gift certificate. And then we have English Nursery. And City Lumber does a little basket with gardening stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Tongue Point Job Corps, the students have made a bird bath.
Oh, nice. And then there are all kinds of other things like tickets.
Right, and restaurants and hotels.
Cool.
So
okay.
It's a total of 25 raffle prizes.
Tell us which hotels.
Commodore.
Cool.
Cannery Pier Hotel and Holiday Inn Express.
I see. All the places you'd want to send your family when they come to town so they don't stress you out by staying in your house.
Right. That's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that.
Okay. So it doesn't, there is a limit as to how late they could buy a ticket, but they could, like, up until?
They can buy a ticket up until the drawing. We'll be selling tickets up until.
Oh, for the raffle.
For the raffle.
Okay.
They can buy tickets when they buy their ticket to the garden tour at 690 17th Street, and then they can buy tickets at the reception.
Okay. And is there anywhere else you can buy raffle tickets?
No.
Okay, because I know we were selling them Sunday at the Sunday market.
Yeah, individuals may be out there selling them.
Oh, okay.
We all have tickets, okay. And if we see you, we may try to sell tickets to you.
Okay.
But they're $1 a ticket, okay. And 15 tickets for $10.
Okay. So now, the purpose of this tour is this is one of the fundraising efforts of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, which is an organization whose goal is to keep some of the most incredible architecture that we have here. And
we call it actually to promote, protect, and preserve the historic architecture in the Lower Columbia region. So basically, we're trying to help each other learn how to maintain these wonderful old houses and buildings that we have here.
And part of that is the yard, you know, having a compatible yard.
Right.
Whether it's to scale if you have a very grand house or to scale if you have a small house.
Exactly.
And if you want to know what plants work with your historic home.
Right.
Or maybe your less historic home. Of course, as time goes by.
Well, and for our garden tour, we don't just do gardens that are in historic houses. We have, most of them are, because that's what most of them are here, but there is one on Smith Lake in Warrenton that is not historic. It's newer, it's beautiful, but it is a fabulous garden and certainly warrants being on the garden tour.
Right. Well, that's a cool thing because it doesn't matter.
You know, we're involved with gardens at this garden tour, not with homes and houses and the architecture.
Although, when you go in the person's yard, you get to see the outside of the house and you can peek through the windows.
True.
And then you can fantasize and hope that someday that house will be on the holiday tour where you can go in the house.
Exactly.
Which is the other end of the awesome fundraisers that the Lower Columbia Preservation Society does.
Yes.
Where you get to go in. So you get to go out. Of course, this is the time of year when you want to go out. In December, you probably don't really want to tromp around in the yard.
Well, and that's interesting because when our garden tour starts working on the tour, we start in February and we find gardens and we have to go and look at gardens and there's not a lot. You have to use your imagination. And of course, the garden owners tell us what will be in bloom. But it looks quite differently in February than it's going to look in July.
My yard certainly does. So what is the age that qualifies a home as historic?
Well,
it's 50 years
you
now.
Know, I think probably now even the homes that are built in the 50s are considered historic. And perhaps getting into the 60s.
Whoa, that would be just about everything, your house, my house, certainly your houses.
Yeah, we don't have the 70s, 80s, and on up yet, but... certainly, ranch styles now are considered to be historic and are worth preserving.
And that's interesting because, you know, knockout, you know, suburban, just quick after the war, you know, get houses built kind of thing. That puts a whole nother look at what might be considered worth saving. It's definitely a style of architecture from that period. I grew up in one.
Right.
All right. Well, good. All right. So we'll just do a quick recap. Saturday, July 10th, go to
690 17th Street in Astoria.
Buy tickets, get your ticket, and go enjoy the tour. Buy raffle tickets and have a great day.
And if I could just say, you can start buying your tickets at 690 17th Street at 9:30 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And we sell tickets until 1 o'clock.
Sounds
and
good.
So that's when we'll be selling them.
Great. Thank you for coming in. Mm-hmm. You've been listening to... Let's see, talk about the Lower Columbia Preservation Society's annual garden tour this Saturday with Linda Oldenkamp and Melissa Yao.
Thank you, Ann.
Yeah. I have no music. Okay, so Let's go on to historic trees. Not historic trees. The heritage tree. Oh boy, what is our group called? I'm in it, but I don't know what it is.
How about this one?
That one is perfect. So, Bob, what is the group called? The City of Astoria has a new group called the Heritage Tree.
Well, the original committee was the Heritage Tree Committee, and that was chaired by Arlene Lemire. And those guys actually worked for many months with Pacific Power and Brims and a bunch of other people to get us 200 trees to plant all around the Astoria area for the bicentennial mm-hmm. of Astoria in 2011. But it just happened to be the bicentennial of Pacific Power this year. So we planted those trees in 2000. On Earth Day, which is what?
April
22nd, something like that.
Yeah.
So a little bit more than 2 months ago. And we were really worried because right after we planted them, it got hot and dry for about 2 days. And that was it. It's rained almost continuously since then, which is great. But the committee that was set up by the city council to take care of the trees after they were planted is called the Tree Stewardship Committee.
Oh, okay. And now this is headed by you, by Arlene Lemire?
This is chaired by me.
Okay.
And I was appointed by the mayor to chair this committee, and I went out and tried to recruit some people, including Ann Goldine, your host. And then Arlene was kind enough to get some muscle behind this recruitment affair. And we now have, 14 or 15 people on this committee, and certainly you could join also. And the idea is to make sure that these trees make it the first 2 or 3 years of a young tree's life in an urban setting is beset with problems.
When we had our meeting, I don't know if that was the first meeting, but the first meeting that I went to, we talked about lawnmowers hitting them, which could certainly, a little tree would be done, just knocked over. Deer browsing. We've had people complaining that their baby trees have been deer browsed. But then the big thing is drought. And people don't think of this area as droughty, but from now on, after July 4th until October, we are going to have virtually no rain. And those trees will die if they're not irrigated on a regular basis. So that was most of the focus of that whole meeting, was how do we keep these trees alive? And we thought it would be a great idea to talk about how to do that.
Tree care in general. In the Pacific Northwest, we have this Mediterranean-type climate where it doesn't rain much in the summer. And most of the nurseries in the world are set to the climate that exists on the east coast of the United States, which is they get actually most of their rain in the summer. And it comes in buckets at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon each day. And the poor people on the east coast now are hoping that it will come in buckets each day because it's over 100 degrees. But in the Pacific Northwest, we have this Mediterranean climate in general. There's no rain at all in July, August, September, and October. And that's a challenge because people from this area, for instance, are often not here during that time. And so trees are generally tried to be planted in the winter when it rains so that there's enough
Or the
rain,
fall.
Or the fall.
Yeah.
So that there's enough water to get the roots to a point where they can start sucking up water from a further distance. Just in case.
Right.
Also, the trees that were picked for planting were picked especially to hopefully be able to be drought resistant. Mm-hmm. So they're typical ornamental varieties, but of those varieties, they were picked for being drought resistant and somewhat hardy for mm-hmm. conditions.
For this climate,
yeah.
Right, which is lots of rain in the winter and none in the summer.
Yeah, so the native trees that you see here, the large evergreens, they're well set up for that sort of weather. And
they know how to do it.
But, even those trees, if you've seen a cedar tree, a little seeding like, 6 inches or a foot tall, they will bake in the summer if they're not protected by shade. So these the forest trees are very used to forest conditions, which is basically they're going to be shaded until they're big enough to beat out everyone else. And some of the trees that we planted here, because that's the space that was available, or don't have that shade. And so they really need water and care and tender loving care, just like a baby. It's just, imagine you were a baby and your parents left for the summer. you would need tender loving care. You would need milk. You would need some food and protection from the heat. Mm-hmm. So our little babies need protection.
Absolutely. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about how and when to take care of your trees. And if you've planted some trees, what to do about it. You're listening to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Bob Goldberg, and we're on the Tree Stewardship Committee. We'll be right back. And if you want to give us a call and weigh in on the conversation, please do so, 503-325-0010.
Destino, ia ser padre um menino, no cabaré se encontrou, parou e meu pai Exu. Um tempo em medo da vida, um tempo em medo da briga, do jeito que veio encarou, parou e pombadia.
We're back, you're listening to Digging the Dirt, I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Bob Goldberg. We are on the Tree Stewardship Committee of the City of Astoria, and we're talking about how to take care of trees. So, you know, a lot of times people get the inspiration, especially if they've lost a tree during the winter, in the spring, to go to a nursery and get a replacement. And then it may or may not do well, depending on how they take care of it. So, let's see. One of the things, before we embarked on this, there was a tree planting training. And at the tree planting training, there were a lot of myths dispelled. And one was about roots, competition from weeds. Somebody asked about taproots, and the comment was made that most of the nutrients of all trees is very shallow, where they actually get their water and their nutrients is not deep. And so that if you have grass over, you know, up to the tree, excuse me, the grass will take up a significant amount of the water. So that's another thing. If you have a new tree, get the grass around it off.
We actually have
Oops. What happened here? Try again.
Okay. No.
Which one are you on? Two. Try that one.
Hello, hello.
Okay, sorry.
This is Bob. I'm back. one of the problems we're having is that a lot of the trees that we planted were on grassy parts of the properties. And it turns out that if you have, grass forms these mats very close to the surface and kind of takes over. It's why grass doesn't, if you try to get water through grass, it's very difficult.
Right.
So the idea would be, if you do have a tree, no matter when you planted it, you want to get the grass away from the tree as much as possible, actually.
At least to the drip line.
At least to the drip line. And the drip line is the width or the circumference of the tree. So at its widest part, wherever.
Of the branches, not the trunk, but
of the branches. Where a leaf is, that's furthest from the main trunk. That's your drip line, and that goes all the way around. And if you put a circle and get the grass away from that, that's great. If you can get it completely away, it's even better. But some of these trees were planted in grassy places, and the grass was not even cut away at all. So one of the things that we're doing is we're going around to some of these plantings and taking the grass away from the tree very carefully, because when you've planted new trees, their roots are just getting going, and you don't really want to use any kind of power tools. In general, when I had my training, we learned that when you're close to the main trunk of a tree, you only want to use your hands to do weeding, because any other tools will cut the roots as well as as well as any weeds. So most of the trees are planted okay, and it's just that you want to get the grass away from it and maybe some mulch on top of it so that the water that you do water doesn't evaporate right away.
Now, but if the mulch is too thick, it can smother the roots, and there's this balance between coverage and smothering.
That's right. And when you plant a tree, if you're out there and you, if any of you are trying to plant trees now, good luck. But if you are planting a tree,
pretty much anything, this is not the best time.
Yeah. Maybe some vegetables. Maybe if you're gonna plant tomatoes, today would be the day because we're gonna have
nice weather.
Pretty good weather. Hopefully, you've had your tomatoes inside and they're nice and growing, and today would be a great day to plant your tomatoes outside and make sure they're watered.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, if you're planting anything, you have to get the height exactly right, because it turns out that the amount of air and the amount of air in the soil is a big deal for the roots. The roots have to have a certain amount of air.
And so one of the things that happens if you plant your tree too deep, the tree actually suffocates.
That's right.
And because dies.
The roots don't have enough air. They're not close enough to the surface.
Right.
On the other hand, if you plant it too high, your roots are exposed, and the roots can't handle total exposure to air. So there's some techniques. You want to, there's usually a flare at the bottom of the main trunk, and you want to plant it just where the flare starts to really do its thing. And in general, if you're planting, especially in the winter, you'd want to plant high, because everything is going to tend to settle. And so when we were planting the trees, if we had a trained person there, we were trying to plant them a little bit high. Then when you're putting mulch on, you don't want to put any more than 3 inches of mulch. And you don't want to put it anywhere near the trunk, because again, you'll suffocate the roots if you...
And there's another problem. When you cover the trunk, you're giving harbor for things like rats and mice, burrowing animals to moles to take up residence and say, this is a cool place. So you want to keep around the base of the tree clear.
So in general, you want to pile this mulch up in a sort of a pile that is narrow in the middle. Mm-hmm. And extensive around the ends. And that basically what that does is, if it does rain or if you're watering, it will gather the water in inside. And that circle goes to the drip line in general. You want that circle to be as large as the drip line. And so as the tree gets bigger, you generally want to cut out more space. So again, if you're planting a tree and this tree is going to get, let's say, 20 feet tall, and it may get 10 feet wide, you want to know that eventually you're going to have to take 10 feet of grass out.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need a big space for these trees, especially if they're ornamentals that are not used to our weather.
Okay, now let's do a brief. When you put mulch, it keeps water in. It's a weed suppressant. And so that's why mulch is a good... And there are some nutrients that go into the soil. Okay, so now let's get to the water.
Got to get to water.
Water once a week. Deep once a week. Now, this isn't the... Sorry, Barry. The spritz the hose for 2 seconds and call it good. We're talking about deep.
Yeah, this is, in general, the better way to water is called deep watering. You want to get the water to the bottom of the roots, and it takes some time to do that. So you'll generally, if you have a hose out, you'll want to do this at least once a week. If it gets really hot,
maybe twice,
perhaps more. And a friend of mine in Seattle that I just saw, who's a longtime tree steward, said, you know, you got to get over this thing that it's possible to overwater a tree. It's not really possible to overwater a tree, although some people here...
If you dug a big hole and you fill it up every day, you could probably drown it. But yeah, other than that, no.
It's probably not going to happen in the summer. The soil gets very dry, and there's a lot of clay soil here, and it gets very hard.
If you dig right now, I was weeding last night. The soil is completely dry.
That's right. So all it takes is one day, really. So we're going to be out there today watering. And you want to water for, I'd say, at least 5 minutes with a hose.
Mm-hmm. And that's with the water running. The 5 minutes doesn't start till the hose is on.
That's right. At least five minutes. And you'll want to give at least 5 gallons, at least 5 gallons a week. Probably better to give 10 to 15. And that may sound like a lot, but it's 3 5-gallon buckets.
Mm-hmm.
And if you fill the 3 5-gallon buckets and pour it out relatively slowly, you're probably good for at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, when I have young trees, I tend to water them every other day in the summer. And that's just because I love being out in the garden. And it gives me an excuse to be out there.
And obviously, if a person doesn't have time to do that and they want to water more frequently, they can set up a drip irrigation system where they have some drippers all the way around the tree that go on, you know, every other day and stay on for an hour. And that would be a way to make sure that your tree is okay. And then we have these little sort of like tires you fill up with water that you can put around with emitters.
Yeah, I was just in Seattle and saw some of their gator, they call them gators, because they look like the gators you would put on to go into a stream to fish. And you fill these things up with water, and they have little holes in them, and they emit water
okay.
as you go.
Now, these 120 or whatever of the 200 trees that were donated that are planted are in a number of locations. Some are public and some are private. And are let's list where they are.
Yeah, here's a list. There are a few trees at Alderbrook Hall, which is a beautiful park in Alderbrook. At the Customs House, which is, around 36th.
Across from Safeway.
Yeah, across from Safeway. Some beautiful trees there. At the Maritime Museum, where a bunch of trees used to be, that blew down in the big storm. And let's see, and near the Native American statue that's on the big circle that comes into Seattle from Warrenton. At the Pacific Power Substation on the south part. At the Yacht Club, Favel House. And all the schools, Astor, Lewis and Clark, the middle school and the high school, and Robert Gray Elementary, which doesn't have public school anymore, but has lots of schooling. There's one tree at the Astor Column, and at the Pioneer Cemetery is a gorgeous grove of trees as you're walking up to.
A lot of those went down in 07, and so a lot of those got replanted.
Yes.
Yeah, so, as part of it. There are a number there.
There are, I think there are 26 trees there.
Uh-huh.
And at the Sunset Transportation Transit Center, which is on 10th and Marine Drive approximately, there's a few trees in planters, and Star of the Sea School even. They have a wonderful parent helping. So there's trees all over the place, and if you're interested in helping us out, let's see. Perhaps the easiest way, you can have my phone number. Mm-hmm. My phone number is 503-325-3275. And if you don't get that, please call the station 503-325-0010, and they'll give you that information.
What about the rest of the trees? Are they available for people to plant?
I think we're talking about that. Some of you, including our city manager, took advantage of some certificates and planted some trees, and you can certainly get help, but I think there's more.
Call the city to get those. You have been listening to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine, and I have been with Bob Goldberg talking about the stewardship tree program. I recommend planting trees frequently and often. Just make sure they're the right tree in the right place.
Right.
If you missed part of this program and you want to pick it up, or any of the public affairs programs on KMUN, you can go to coastradio.org, go to Listen on Demand, and you can find it by topic and date. And download them. And